Some years ago, there was a book making the rounds of the top Christian books called Blue Like Jazz, the subtitle of which is Non-Religious Thoughts on Christian Spirituality. And it was a good book, but unfortunately I can't remember much about it, you know, those kind of books. But I do recall that in one chapter, the author, Donald Miller, talks about why he didn't like to go to church. And he says this: I felt like people were trying to sell me Jesus. I was a salesman for a while, and we're taught that you're supposed to point out all the benefits of the product you're selling. And that's how I felt about some preachers that I heard speak. They were always pointing out the benefits of the Christian faith. That rubbed me wrong. It's not that Christianity doesn't have benefits. It does. But did they have to speak about Jesus like he were a vacuum cleaner? I never saw Jesus as a product. And not only that, they were always pointing out how their specific church was so great. The bulletin read like a brochure for Amway. I felt like I got bombarded with commercials all week and then went to church and got even more. Donald Miller. Now, I bring this up because October is the time when the clergy and people of St. James reconsider their financial stewardship for another year. And in many places, stewardship sermons do sound like commercials. And Father David and I hope to avoid that. And of course, this place cannot function without your financial support, but the goal for the next couple of weeks is to lift up the topic of money and wealth and financial resources and giving, not to sell you something, but to open up the scriptures and find out what plan God has for us when it comes to our things. So we lift up this important spiritual topic. And I say spiritual topic because our stewardship of time, talent, and treasure is, in a sense, sacramental. It is an outward, invisible sign of something inward and spiritual that is going on. Where people spend their time says something about what is important to them. The workaholic, for instance, you ever notice that workaholics rarely get anything done? But the workaholic who spends all of his time at work and no time with his children, well, you can see where his priorities lie. And the same with our money. How we spend our money reflects an interior spiritual disposition. Your checkbook is a moral document. And you can open it up, and I encourage you to do that later this week, and just page through it. And you'll be able to see where your priorities lie. So stewardship is a spiritual matter, and that's why the clergy preach about it. So here goes. But 3 years back in another context, I shared with you an article from Time magazine. Does God want you to be rich? Was the title. And those of you who are here recall that I gave you a little test, and it's a test you can take in your own mind. There were four questions. Number one, do you own a pair of shoes? Number two, do you have a change of clothes? Number three, do you have a roof over your head? And number four, do you know where your next meal is coming from? And if you said yes to those four questions, you are in the top 2% of the world's population when it comes to wealth. You are wealthier than 98% of your fellow human beings. So let's dispatch the question quickly. Does God want you to be rich? you already are. Now we have in the gospel this morning the well-known words of Jesus, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, render to God the things that are God's. And this is one of those sayings that is often taken out of context and misinterpreted. Because Jesus is responding to a specific question posed by the scheming Pharisees, we might be left somehow with the impression that there's a dividing line between the sacred and the secular, between God's stuff and our stuff. But in fact, it's all God's stuff. As the psalmist says, the sheep of a thousand hills are his. Or as the spiritual puts it, he's got the whole world in his hand. Now, you'll recall an episode from the life of King David. David is nearing the end of his life, and he's had this vision of building a temple for God. He has a plan of what that temple will look like and how it will be furnished. And he's gathered the people of Israel together in a great assembly to receive the offering of what has been given to build this temple. The children of Israel have dug deep. They've sacrificed. They've given millions and millions of shekels. And David himself has made a huge personal contribution. And in a moment of eloquence that can only come from God, David cries out, all things come of thee, O Lord, and of thine own have we given thee. And he continues, thine, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. Everything that is in the heavens and earth is thine, and thou art exalted as king above all. The earth and everything on it belongs to God. Simple. Well, maybe not. One of the first things that we learn as children is the concept of mine. And this follows us all through our life. My car, my clothes, my house, my money, mine, mine, mine. I earned it. I deserve it. I own it. It's mine. No, says the scriptures, it's God's. Now, I want you to cast your mind back a couple of Sundays when we heard the parable of the wicked tenants. They dwell in the midst of this vineyard, and for years, the tenants have been free to enjoy this vineyard. But it's not their vineyard. They enjoy its fruits, but they do not own it. And then comes the day, that normal day, that terrible day, when the owner sends someone to collect the rent. And they beat the owner's representatives. They kill the owner's son. When he comes to collect the rent which is his due. Now, the interpretation of that parable is clear. God is the owner. He is the one who provides the vineyard. And out of his love, he's given this vineyard over to the care of tenants who are to manage the vineyard for the owner. And you and I are the tenants. And hopefully, we will be better ones than the ones in that parable. Now, when my family drives by car to Canada, we want to complete the journey in the quickest possible time, because I've learned that there's only one thing worse than being in a car with children for 22 hours, and that is being in a hotel room for more than one night. So, in the interest of speed, lunch very often consists of McDonald's or something else equally artery clogging. And one trip, when the girls were very, very young, they wouldn't do this now, but very, very young, I tried to reach over and take a French fry. And the bag was pulled away with the words, "These are mine." The child in question did not understand her parents' ability to provide, did not understand that the parents could have gotten their own fries or could have taken those fries away. I was the owner of those fries. Sort of like the tenants in that parable. God is the owner of the vineyard. He is the owner of everything. We are his tenants, or to use a better word, his stewards. A steward is someone who manages the property of others. And the foundation, the bedrock of Christian stewardship is the fact that God is the owner of everything. Our time, which is in his hand, our abilities, which he's given us, the material wealth, which he has allowed to us, everything that we are accustomed to call our own is not. It is gift. And over his time, his abilities, his material wealth, God appoints us his managers, his stewards, his caretakers. We use his things with enjoyment, but wisely and with thanksgiving. Now, I've always heard that, as so have you. And one day, when I was standing at an open grave, conducting a funeral, I read those words from the Right One burial office. "We brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Even the thing that we most call our own, our very life, belongs to God. We are to be thankful for that span of years that God has given us, to care for them, to make them productive, and we are seriously deluded if we think our life belongs to us. It is gift. And I could give you countless other examples. Your job is a gift. God gave you that job. Your children and grandchildren, they are gift. God has given them to you. You have the stewardship of their upbringing, but God is their owner. That sparkling personality that I know you all have is gift. That bed you slept in is gift, and the food on your table too. It is God's bed, God's food, not yours. It is gift. That house that you've worked so hard for, it is gift. God gave you the drive, the ambition, the work ethic to earn the money to pay the mortgage. You are the steward of it, but it is his house. It is gift. And this church that we're sitting in, it is not ours. It is God's church. It is gift. And all of this is a very long, roundabout way of making the one point I'm trying to make. God is the owner. We are the stewards, his managers, his caretakers, and we are all rich beyond measure. Everyone in this room, everyone, is richer than 98% of the world's population. And I pray that we as people and parish know this. And before there can be any talk of budgets and pledge cards, we have to hammer that truth into our minds and into our hearts. Everything I am, everything I have, my intellect, my skills, my gifts, my ability to make a living from God, come from God. It is gift. And I want to be the best steward over his stuff that I can possibly give. I have, just to finish up, in my files a little rhyme that someone once sent me. I've read it to you before. I think in 2005 was the last time I read it. But it's the best way, I can't think of a better way, to illustrate this concept of gift. And it goes like this. a woman was sitting at an airport one night. With several hours to go before her flight, she hunted for a book in the airport shop, bought a bag of cookies, and sought a place to drop. She was engrossed in her book, but happened to see that the man beside her, as bold as could be, grabbed a cookie or two from the bag in between, which she tried to ignore lest there be a scene. She read, munched cookies, and watched the clock as the gutsy cookie thief diminished her stock. She was getting more irritated as the minutes ticked by, thinking, if I weren't so nice, I'd blacken his eyes. With each cookie she took, he took one too. When only one was left, she wondered what he'd do. With a smile on his face and a nervous laugh, he took the last cookie and broke it in half. He offered her half as he ate the other. She snatched it from him and said, oh, brother, this guy has some nerve and is also very rude. He didn't have the least gratitude. She'd never known when she was so galled and sighed with relief when her flight was called. She gathered her belongings and headed for the gate, refusing to look back at that annoying ingrate. She boarded the plane and sank in her seat and saw her book by that time almost complete. As she reached in her baggage, she gasped with surprise. There was her bag of cookies in front of her eyes. If mine are here, she moaned with despair, then the others were his. And he tried to share. Too late to apologize, she realized with grief that she was the rude one, the ingrate, the thief. Next time you take a cookie, dear friends, remember to whom the bag belongs.